We're holding on Kufmemches onward bays, two lines from the bottom. We're talking still about Matnas Bori and Matnas Shchivmira. So the Gemara talks about what lashonis constitute a what expressions that he might use constitute a loshon of matana. Obviously, if he says I'm giving it to him, then that would be a Loshon Matana. But the Rav Sheshis is going to point out there are several others as well. Omer Rav Sheshis, so Rav Sheshis says Yitro. If the person says, as if the person says in his Loshon of Matana, so and so should take such and such, or V'yizke, or he says he should be Zoicha in it, or V'yachzik, or he says he should be Machzik in it, V'yikne, or he should acquire Kulan Loshon Matana hein. All of those are a loshen of matana, and therefore, if it's a matnas shchivmera, then he's going to be koneh it without any further ado, provided, as we've been learning, provided that the shchivmera actually ends up passing away. You have machlokas who showing him what happens if a healthy person uses these lashonis. Would it also work? Would it also work? There are the Ramban actually brings from the Rimigash that by a body it wouldn't work even if there was a kinyan, because it would be called a kinyan dvarim. It's a kinyan only on words. And the Ramban says, and then the Ramban argues that no, if it doesn't work, if it doesn't work by a body, then it wouldn't work by a shchivmera either. So it has to be that it would work by a body as well. The Yad Rama makes a different point as well. He says that, listen, you could always have that a shchivmera, you could say, you could say maybe these lashonis don't actually mean to make the person own it. It just means rather that it's going to be called Meshata Yisibacha, where you could say afterwards, I was just kidding. I didn't sincerely mean to give it to you. By a Shchivmera, we wouldn't say that. By a Bori, maybe we would. In any case, but by a Shchivmera, definitely all of these Lashonas work. So in other words, the point being, in other words, we learned before that if he says Ploni should live in this house, it won't work, because he has to be makna him an actual tangible object. So if he uses any of these lashonas to be makna him the object, such the house, then that works. The Masnisa Tana in a Braisa we learn, he used more expressions that he could use, Yachsin v'yeras. He could use the expression Yachsin, which is the Aramaic word for inherit, or Yeh, as one of the Aramaic words for inherit, or Vyeras, which is another one. Yeras is like Yirash in Hebrew. Yachsin, you have another Aramaic word for Yerusha is Achsanta, so Yachsin would be from the same shoresh. So both of them are words in Aramaic that mean to inherit. Those would also work Beroy LeYoshei when the recipient is somebody who is otherwise capable of yashining him. For example, one son among his other sons, namely that Braisa would be according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broicha, whereas we learned in the previous parak, he holds that it is possible to disinherit one son in favor of another, or one daughter in favor of another, etc., where they're roi to yashin him, and he can use a loshen of Yerusha, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Broicha holds it would work. And we said there the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broicha in that. So therefore, so now, for example, he's here we have a shchivmera is giving out his nechassim, and he wants to give, for example, one particular asset to one of his sons from all the other ones. Then he can say words like yachsin or yeras, and it would work, and it works as a matnas shchivmera because his son is in line to yashin him anyway. Okay, the Gemara asks Sibayilahu. Well, then we have a question. What about some other lashonis? What about if he says Yehona behen mahu? What about if he were to say that Pliny should have hana from my nechassim? So what does that mean? Dinehevo kula matana karma. Does he mean that as a lashon of that the guy should have it as a full-fledged matana and therefore it would work? Or maybe it only means that he intends for that other person to have a certain amount of hana from it, but not to actually own it. And it would be back to the case where he says Pliny should live in this house, where that's not going to work because he's not ma being makna him the actual house. Here's another one. What about Yeruah behen mahu? What about if he says a loshen, he should be seen in them? What would be the din? Could would we say that that means that he would be seen in them like the way a person is seen in his own nechassim, like a person is seen going in and out of his own nechassim, and therefore he would means he would be the same thing. Or does it just mean that he'll be seen in them like he might appear in it one time? It doesn't mean an ongoing thing. Another one, Yamod Behen Mahu. What about Yamod Behen? What about if he says he should stand in them? Does that mean that he's going to stand in them and keep ownership of them permanently? Or just again, that it means he's going to stand in them as a temporary thing? Another one, Yishoyin Behen. What if he says he should be able to lean or depend on them? Same thing. Does it mean something that he's going to have as an ongoing basis, or just a one time, or just a one time thing? So in each of these cases, we can't be sure whether it means a kinyan, a permanent kinyan, or whether he just maybe means a one time thing or something like that. And in that case, it wouldn't be a valid kinyan. In fact, the Ritva explains we could be talking about. He says nechosai deploini. He says my nechosim deploini, which by itself would be good enough. But then he adds one of these lashonas. Does that mean that he actually mean that he's reinforcing what he's saying, or does it mean on the contrary? He's saying when I say my nechosim are going deploini is only insofar as such and such. Only that he should have a temporary use of it or something. So the answer for all of them is teiku. We have to leave it as teiku, and therefore it doesn't work because I'm motzi mechavel avaraya. Later on, when the yoshim come to get the property, then if he wants to be able to say that he gets it, then he's going to have to demonstrate that these were valid lashonis of kinyan, and he's not going to be able to do that. The Rosh interestingly points out, what about if he says that I'm leaving such and such to Pliny? That would work because the Losh and I'm leaving is also that's what it means. In other words, he's dying and he's leaving his nechosim to somebody else. Although there are Rishonim who disagree with that. The Maharik says that not. In turn, the Radach, Rab David Cohen, says it depends. If in just like in English, we use the word leave to actually mean leaving an inheritance, so that would work. But we're talking about in places where they don't use that as the common word for bequeathing a property to somebody else. Then, according to the Maharik, maybe it wouldn't work. All right. The Gemara says, now, let's talk about another question. So far, we've been saying that if a Shechiv Merah gave away all of his nechosim, then it's pending until, that's a classic Matnas Shechiv Merah, but then it's pending until he actually dies. If he recovers, then we said that everything is revoked and he gets everything back because he didn't mean to give away everything and leave himself penniless. So now the question is, all of that applies when he's giving it away. What about if he sold all of his nechosim and then he recovered? So in other words, we could say it's one thing by a matona, because that's similar to a yerusha. But maybe we would say when it comes to selling, that's different. Maybe selling would be different. Maybe it needs a kinyan, and therefore now if he recovered and there hadn't been a kinyan, would he be able to take it back? The Nimuka Yosef explains in particular, in other words, we could say that only by a matnas shchiv merah, we learned before, and we're going to learn now in the Gemara as well, they made it like the Chachamim made it to have the force of Yerusha, but by Mechira is something else, because when it comes to selling, he sold it, but there's also, he has an asset now in his possession, the money. So therefore, maybe he's completely machno, maybe not. Maybe we would figure that he sold it only because he figures he's going to die, and therefore he should be able to take it back. So Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, im Amar ein echoizer. So Rav Yehuda tells us in the name of Rav that if he recovered, he wouldn't be able to take it back. Nevertheless, it would be a fully valid sale. We would say, look, you know, you sold it, you got the money, you have an asset now, therefore you can't take it back. The Zimnin, Omer of Yehuda, Omer Rav, Omer Choizer. On the other hand, there were other times when Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav that if he recovered, he could retract it. So what is it? So can he retract or not? The answer is Veloy Pligi. These two versions of what Rabbi Yehuda said are not actually arguing But rather, hod isnu lazuzi be'enayu hod parinu b'choiva. It depends. Does he still have the money be'en? Then we would say that so he hasn't used the money. So therefore, so evidently he figured that he's going to die, and therefore he figured he's selling only because he's going to die. And then if he recovers, then he can take it back, and he's going to give back the money. Hod parinu b'choiva, as opposed to if he used the money to pay off his debts, then we would say. Then we would say he doesn't get it back. He can't retract the sale because we see he went even so far as to spend the money. So there's no money left to give. So we can say that it means that he wouldn't be able to take it back, and the sales remain final. That's according to the Rashbam. The Rimigash and some other Rishonim learn the other way around. Actually, if the money still exists, then he can't retract. Because then it amounts to that he didn't give all his nechassim. Then it amounts to he still has something left. And as we've learned before, when a shchiv merah gives away only some of his nechassim, then it's irrevocable, even if he recovers, because then he kept something for himself in the first place, and therefore it means he wasn't doing it because he figures he's going to die soon. As opposed to if he spent all the money on paying off his debts, then there's nothing left over there, and therefore it's a matnas shchiv merah b'kulu, a matnas shchiv merah that applies to all of his nechassim, and therefore, as usual, he would be able to take that back. So according to that, it would be exactly the opposite of the way that the Rashbam learns. The Rambam paskins like the first possibility, like the way that the Rashbam says it, that if the money is intact. Then he's able to retract the sale, and otherwise not. And then in turn, in Shulchan Aruch and in the Nois HaKelim, it discusses these various opinions. Iboilu. Now we have another question. Shchiv Merah Shahoida Mahu. What would happen if the Shchiv Merah admitted that he owes money to somebody? So he says, before he dies, that such an asset of his belongs to Pliny. Now, usually we would say Hidas Baldin Kamei Edim Dami. Usually we would say a person admits something, then we would say we believe him outright, even if there are Edim against that. Even in this case, we'd have a chazaka that these nechosim do not belong to Pliny. We know they belong to him, but nevertheless, Hidas Baldin Kamei Edim Dami. So do we say now? Do we say that over here as well, or do we say that no? The reason why he would be saying such a thing is it's called shalolas bias bonav. He doesn't want that people to think that his sons who are going to inherit him are rich. So therefore, he might be saying that this property, all of his property, belongs to Pliny, belongs to somebody else. Not that genuinely it belongs to Pliny, but just so that it doesn't go out. So they don't go out rumors about his children. Look how rich they are. So in other words, the point is, we have a chazaka after all, where against his hadar, we have a chazaka that we know that all this time that the property was his. So we have reason to say, and we're going to learn in a couple of months, Rez Hashem, in Sanhedrin, about such a case where a person makes a certain admission, and it's called, it's also a Shchiv Merah we're talking about where he says that he owes money to somebody, and we say over there, it doesn't necessarily mean that he actually owes the money, it means Shalolas B.S. Bonav, he doesn't want people to think that his children are rich. He's afraid of an Ayin Hara or whatever, So that would be a reason, maybe, why not to believe him. Now the Rashbam points out that actually we do have there is actually a case there in the Gemara in Sanhedrin where actually the Gemara says that. We take a say that it wasn't a genuine Haidah, and therefore they would be. So he says, for example, he says before he died that he owes Pliny a certain amount of money. And now after he dies, then that Pliny comes and says, Nuri, your father said you owe me X amount of money, pay up. And they say it was only Shaloy Las Bias Bonav, it was only that our father said that because he didn't want people to think that we're rich. And that's a valid claim. The reason is, so how is it over here? Then we're asking whether such a thing is valid or not. So the Rashbam draws a distinction because he wouldn't say, when he's saying that he owes money to somebody, we have a concept called Eved Loiva Le'ish Malveh. It's not good to be a borrower. A borrower is, to a certain extent in halacha, considered like a servant to the lender, which has certain implications in halacha. So therefore, so we can say that he wouldn't want to do that. And therefore, we could say it's only Shalei Las B'yas Banav. But over here, the property, whatever property or whatever assets we're talking about exists be'ein, and he says that it's pointies, so it might actually be, we didn't have a chazaka, fine, it might be that years earlier the guy had left it by him as a pikodin or something like that, or he was makna him through somebody else, and therefore that would explain why we have a chazaka saying that that it belonged to him, but nevertheless that chazaka wouldn't contradict what he's saying now. So that's the question in the Gemara. Do we say it is shaloi las b'yas banav, or would we say that it's different when he says that he owes money to somebody from a loan versus over here where he says that it belongs to somebody else, which could be for other reasons as well? That's according to the Rashbam. So in other words, so we have a relevant Gemara in Sanhedrin, but the Rashbam draws that distinction between there and here, because over there he's saying that he owes somebody money as a result of a loan, where here he's saying that it belongs to somebody else, possibly as a result of something else. Tosfos though asks, on the face of it, you should say that, no, on the contrary, you could say that when he says that he owes money to somebody because of a halva, then you would say, and there's more reason to say that he's telling the truth, because after all, he's putting himself under a shibud. But when it comes to a pikadon, it might be shaloi las b'yas banav. And for some other reasons, Tosfos explains like this. Sure, when we have the shchiv merah as admitting, he's saying that it belongs to Pliny. Would we consider that a matnas shchiv merah with all of the consequences that come with that, namely that it's not an irrevocable thing? If he recovers, we wouldn't hold him to that, and we wouldn't make him give that money to Pliny. Or would we say that it's a haidah, and therefore it's a full-fledged thing, and therefore he does have to, it's considered a regular matana, a regular matnas bari, and therefore he wouldn't be able to revoke it, and he would have to go and give that money to Pliny. So in short, Rabban Hananel explains the same way. So in short, in other words, according to the Rashbam, the question is, do we believe him or not? According to the Ri in Tosfos and Rabban Hananel, the question is whether it's we do believe him, but is it considered a matnas bari or a matnas shchiv merah in terms of do we hold him to it if he recovers? Tosfos also mentions another possibility that the question could be, now that he was moida, that for it would be the other way around, that somebody else has a pikodin in his, that somebody else has a pikodin who that they're holding it for him, where he had previously given it to somebody else. Now that he wants to be makne to a third party, can he do that with only his words, or would we say that he needs something more than that? In which case, according to that, it would actually be a question by a bari as well. So the Gemara would be focusing on a shchiv merah because by a shchiv merah, after all, when he usually says something, and that's good enough without any further kinyan. So the Gemara says Toshma. Let's try to bring a proof from the following story about this matter. So again, the basic question is whether a shchiv merah has the ability to do a hidah like that, which is going to be effective. And we have a few different ways of understanding what the point of the question is. So now we're going to bring a proof that involves a shchiv merah and a hidah, and we're going to see whether it was effective or not. So the Gemara says, Toshma, the isu giyora. We have a story involving isu giyora. Isu was his name. Giyora means the ger. So the Gemara mentions this Isu Giyora in a number of places. He was a ger. So actually we find in a number of places in Shas that at one point Shmuel's daughters were captured and taken prisoner by Goyim. Most of them got out of it okay, and the Gemara mentions in Ksubas that one of them, that in fact they had enough solid. Now, usually when a woman is captured by Goyim, there was the concern she may have been raped by them. The Gemara in Ksubas discusses that most of them had solid enough evidence that didn't happen on the basis of a Pesha also a Pesha Hitter, that one or more of them were even able to marry Koyim. However, one of them, named Rochel, was in fact raped and impregnated by a goy. Then this goy actually became a yid and was megayer while she was pregnant. So the child that she had is a classic example of hirose shalei bikdusha v'lo dase bikdusha. He was conceived when his father was still a goy, but he was born after his father already became a yid. La halacha, he's not considered, even though of course biologically he's his father's son. La halacha, he's not considered related to him. So this is the story with Issur Giyora. The Gemara mentions Issur himself in a number of places. The Gemara mentions him having a business partnership with Reb Safra, for example. The Gemara mentions an interesting thing about him that he talks about in Masecht Avodah Zarah, which we'll get to later this year, or next year, Bez Hashem, about something an observation that he made when he was still a goy, that now he realized when he's a yid, he realizes that's not quite so. Anyway, so this Issur Giyora, he had 12,000 zuz as a pikodin that were being held by Rava for him in safekeeping. Now, Rav Mori Brei, his son, his biological son, Rav Mori, was, as we said, he was conceived when his father was still a goy, but he was, by the time he was born, his father was already a yid. He's not considered related to his father. Therefore, in many places in Chas, we call him Rav Mori Bar Rochel. We call him by his mother's name rather than his father's name because Lahalocha, he didn't have a father. Tosfos discusses there seems to be evidence that there were actually two Rav Mori Bar Rochels in the Gemara, because there's also a Gemara in Shabbos that refers to a Rav Mori Bar Rochel who had a father Rabba. In any case, Tosfos also discusses exactly who his mother Rochel was. Whatever the case, the point is that Tosfos says that actually one reason we would identify him by his mother's name, aside from the point that Vahalocha, he doesn't have a father, another reason might be because his mother Rochel was the daughter of Shmuel, and we want to be miyachis him back to Shmuel. In any case, the point is that he was this Rav Mori was not considered related to his father Issur. So normally, in other words, had he been his father's son, then no problem. When Issur dies, then the 12,000 zuz is going to go to his son, and eventually he can come to Rava and pick it up. But here, here Rav Mori is not considered related to his father biologically, and Obey Rav Hava. Furthermore, Rav Mori at the time was learning, was sitting and learning in the yeshiva, which means therefore that he wasn't around when his father was about to pass away. Rabbeinu Yohonasan says that it means that a different girsa or bar bei rav hava, not that bei rav hava, which would mean he was in the yeshiva. He was a young talmid chacham, but right then he wasn't in the Beis Medrash. And then the following story would be that somebody gave him that somebody told him what's going on. In any case, Omar Rava. So Rava, who was holding the pikadin on behalf of Issur, says to himself, "Heifenik ninu Rav Mori lahani zuzi." How would Rav Mori acquire these zuzim? Is there any way lahalocha that Rav Mori could validly acquire them? In other words, Rava is going to be arguing that there really isn't any, and therefore this is classic nichse ager. And as we've learned several times in the Masechta, when a ger passes away and there's no yoshim, then his money is free for the taking by any yid. So therefore, Rava is going to argue that this money is rightfully mine because I'm the one who holds the pikadon, and therefore I have more of a chazaka on it for than anybody else. So on the face of it, so after we discuss the story, we'll talk about how Rava could do such a thing. What is he greedy for money? Chas v'shalom. There must be a good reason why he wants to keep that money. So we'll get to that at the end of the story. Anyway, so Ramari says, how would Ramari acquire that money? Ibi Yerusha, would he be acquiring it in the regular way through Yerusha? Can't. Lav by Yerushahu. The fact is that a son in this case does not yarshin from his father because, again, they're not considered to be related la halacha. And in fact, for that reason, even though the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan Mebroika, as we've learned before, that a person could say about somebody who's royally yoshoi that he should yarshin it, but he was not royally yoshoi, and therefore, if the ger says that I want my son to inherit, it wouldn't work because the son in this case is not considered his son. Ibamatana, would we say that Issu is going to give it to the Mori as a present? This doesn't work as a matnas shchibmerah. Matnas shchibmerah ki yerusha shavu rabbanim, because a matnas shchibmerah, the chachamim made it to be considered like a yerusha, as we've learned before, and therefore the rule is kol heicha de isa be yerusha isa be matana. So only when he's able to, yarshin it, would he be able to give it as a matnas shchibmerah? Kol heicha de lesa be yerusha lesa be matana. But if it's impossible for yerusha to take place, then matana wouldn't work either. So the Mori, who was not able to yarshin from his father, in other words, the idea is because a matnas shchibmerah takes effect only after the guy dies. If it was a full fledged matana, then it couldn't take effect achamisa. So therefore, so the chachamim made it that it works on grounds similar to yerusha. And since Rav Mori is not able to yarshin from anybody because he's not able to yarshin from anybody because he doesn't have a father la halacha, so therefore it wouldn't work. Tosfos actually learns differently. Tosfos learns if Isser had other children, if he had other children who were conceived after he became a ger, then it actually would work because then at least the ger has somebody who is capable of yarshining him. So therefore, it would be possible for him to do a matnas shchibmerah and disinherit them and instead give it to Ramari. But here, when Ramari is his only son and he's not considered to be his son mahalocha, and therefore Isser has no relatives, then therefore Rava is saying it wouldn't work. And Tosfos actually, by the way, brings up the point: what happened to mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames? Isn't there a mitzvah anyway to fulfill what the mess wanted? And here Issur apparently wants the money to go to the Mori after all. So even if all the methods that Rava is going to mention aren't going to work, at least on the grounds of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, he should do that. And so Tosfos brings from the Rivam that would only be if he says explicitly, give this money to Pliny. But if he says this mana to Pliny without saying tnu or without saying any loshana matana, then we wouldn't. Then it wouldn't work. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss various angles on that point. Maybe it only works mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames only when the money is in the control of a third party, where here it's not really in the control of one because Rava has the money. He's watching the money, but it wasn't to begin with given to him with the intention of eventually giving it to the Mori. In any case, so far Rava is saying it wouldn't work as Yerusha, it wouldn't work as Matana. What about Ibn Meshicha? You're going to say that Ramari could acquire this money, these 12,000 zuz, with Meshicha. It doesn't work. Less new gabe, because the money is not present by Isser or by Ramari. It's in Rava's house. Iba Chalifin, you're going to say that Isser can be makne to Ramari using Kinyan Chalifin. Doesn't work. Ein matbeya nikna b'chalifin. As we learned back in Bava Metzia, coins cannot be acquired with chalifin. We discussed over there that coins themselves are a medium of exchange. They're not something which you can acquire with chalifin. You need some other method of kinyan to be coin of coins. Continues Rava, e agav karka. If you're going to say that Isser is able to be makne the coins to the Mori Agav Karka, as we've learned before, that he can be makne a piece of land to the Mori, and along with it then will go the coins. And the Gemara discusses, and we learned in Kedushin, a whole sugya about whether the coins need to be present on that land. The halacha is they do not. So therefore, Isser could be makne a piece of land, for example, his house, to the Mori, and with it go the coins wherever they are. Doesn't work actually, because Rava says less they are. The fact is, Isser doesn't own any land to be able to do that. So here Tosfos asks the question. Okay, so why doesn't he? Why doesn't he rent some karka or something like that? Or why doesn't he actually not Tosfos, the Rosh asked the question that he could buy or rent a little bit of karka, and then the answer is there wasn't anybody available to sell them to sell it to him. Tosfos also points out that also. That the Isser could have done a Hodah. He were discussing over here in the Gemara, the matter of Hodah Shkivra, he could have admitted that he has a certain amount of land, but the Gemara could have said that. Instead, the Gemara is going to end up saying a Hodah about the money itself. But in any case, Rava is saying, so far, every method that Rav Mori could conceivably get this money doesn't seem to work, la halacha. He continues another one. Ibn Maimad Shloshtan. You're going to say there's yet another possibility of Maimad Shloshtan, where we talked about before a couple of times in the last couple of blat, where if Reuven has money that Shimon owes him, or that Shimon has as a pekodin of his, or whatever, he can get together with him and Shimon and Levi, another party that he wants to transfer it to, and say in the presence of the three of them that I want to give this money now to Levi, and Shimon, you pay it to Levi, or you give it to Levi, as the case may be. So Rava says that it could be made to work, but ishalachli loyazilna. But if Isser or Mari calls for me, then I'm not obligated to go. So Rava is saying it should actually be possible for me to be koine that money, because it seems there's no way that Mari is going to be koine it. Now, again, you're wondering how the fact is, doesn't Rava realize that by rights this money should be going to the Mori? How is he trying to take it for himself? So we'll get back to that at the end of the story. Anyway, Maskiflor of Ika Breder of Ami, sort of Ika Breder of Ami, asks Rava, you know what, there is one more way that you haven't considered that Rav Mori could get the money. You're saying that Rav Mori has no way, but I can tell you there is actually one way. Veloidi Isser, let Isser make a Hodah. That's the reason why we bring in this point over here, because we were asking if a Shrivna is Moida, that he owes somebody money or whatever, does it work? So let Isser make a Hodah, let him make a statement in front of Edim, the Holin Zuzi de Rav Mori Ninu, that these coins belong to Rav Mori, Velik Ninu Boidisa, and then that way Rav Mori will be able to acquire them through Isser's Hodah. So therefore that would work. And again, we had the one explanation in the Rashbam and the two in Tosfos, what the point of that Hodah is. It's saying that we believe him. We ask the question to begin with, whether a Shrimraz Hodah is believable, or whether it's Shaloi Las B.S. Bonav. Or we said maybe we would consider it, would we consider it like a Matnas Shrimra, or would we consider it like a Matnas Bari? So then according to that, then the question would be, if Isser does a Hodah, then one way or the other, it's considered a Matana. And either way, if Isser dies, then Rav Mori gets it regardless. And if we consider it like a Matnas Bari, then Rav Mori would get it even if Isser recovers. And then according to the other explanation in Tosfos, it would be that here we're talking about a Pekodin. Would he have the ability to just transfer it by just saying so? Sort of Ikka Breder of Ami is pointing out there is that way. Adahochi, in fact, as they were discussing this whole point in the Bes Medrash, Nofak Udisa Mibay Isser, sure enough, there went out a report that Isser had done a Hodah like that. Because the Rashbam says the whole discussion was going on in the Beis Medrash. Therefore, there were rumors going around. People were talking about that this point was brought up, that Esther could be Moida, and so somebody else went and told Esther, you know, you should do that. Ikpad Rava. So Rava was upset about that, about these people who told Esther about that. Omar, he says, look at that. People are teaching people outside the Beis Medrash things that the arguments that they could make. And therefore Issu got wind of it, and he went in and they told him what to do. And they caused me a loss. So in other words, Rava was upset that word of this had leaked out, and that sure enough, Issu used that one method of Hodah that was the only way that Rav Mori could get the money. So the point is, we do see from that story that if the Shechiv Merah does a Hodah, it does work. So according to the Rashbam, the point is, we do believe it, and we don't say it's just Shaloi Lasbi Asbanov. According to the Ri and Tosfos, it means that we consider it a matnas shchiv merah. We consider it actually a matnas bori. Because again, it couldn't work as a matnas shchiv merah, because Rava himself had made the point that a matnas shchiv merah only works where there's a possibility of Yerusha, and again, Isur has no real Yoshin. So therefore, it would have to be, the answer would be, according to that, that in fact such a thing is considered like a matnas bori, and therefore it's an irrevocable matana, and it doesn't have anything to do with Yerusha. And according to the Yesh Mefoshim and Tosfos, the point is that this pikadon is able to give it over to somebody else, even without anybody else being present, and it works to transfer the ownership of it from himself to Rav Mori, even while it's still in Rava's possession. In any case, however you learn, according to any of those three possibilities, it did work, but Rava was upset that it worked. Tosfos actually points out that if it was a loan, if Rava had borrowed money from Isur, then he would have had no problem returning it, because even if Rav Mori is not considered lahalocha Isur's son, nevertheless, though, at least Isur did him a favor and lent him the money, but here we're talking about it's a pikadon, it's different. And then Tosfos brings another. That's Rabbi Natam in Tosfos. Then Tosfos brings from the Rivam. There were three brothers, by the way. There was the Rashbam, the Rivam, and Rabbi Natam. They were all the sons of Rabbi Meir, or son-in-law of Rashi. So here we have all three of them discussing. The point. So the Rivam explains that the Gemara infers in Kiddushin that if the son was born Harosa Shalai B'Kiddusha V'Lajasa B'Kiddusha, like Rav Mori, then you should return it to the sons, but Rava doesn't necessarily have to agree with that point. In any case, so now we have the underlying question, though: what was Rava thinking that he would try to keep this money when it's very clear that Rav Mori should be getting it? So there's a couple of points in this. There is actually the Chazan Ish explains that Rava wanted the money to be able to give to tzedakah, to be able to give to tzorchei tzibur. In fact, he quotes a Gemara in Tainis, where the Gemara mentions over there some things that Rav Huna would do on behalf of the poor people in town. And Rava says, you know, I can't do that because there are too many poor people and I would go bankrupt. So now when there's an opportunity to get all this money and he would be able to do that, then Rava is saying that he wants the money for that purpose. And now when it turns out that there is a way around it, fine, Rav Mori is going to give tzedakah as well, sure, but not necessarily to the same degree that he, Rava, was going to do, and therefore Rava is upset at the lost opportunity. Then there's another point. Actually, a very interesting point. There's the famous Spoudisher Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Meir Mazul. From Tunisia. He's one of the big leaders of the Sfardish community in Eretz Yisrael. He was very close with the Rebbe over the years. Anyway, he gives an interesting point over here that Bechlal, the whole thing, he says it's not that Rava wanted to keep the money for himself. It's more that Rava was... Rava wanted to discuss with his Talmidim and say, is there a way? In other words, when we say over here Ikpad Rava, the fact is, what do you mean? If it was just a matter of, it's not like everybody knows that he's holding on to these pikadon. If he really wanted to just keep the money for himself, all he has to do is just say nothing, and nothing would come of it. Instead, why does he bring it into the Beis Medrash and going back and forth on it and all the different possibilities? So it means really that he did want to give the money to Rav Mari, but he wants to sharpen up the Talmudim. He wants to ask them. He wants to see. Let's go through this. Let's see if there's any of you can find a way that it would be valid lahalacha. And then in the end, Rav Ika finds out. So when he says Ikbad Rava, doesn't mean he was really angry. Why should he be? Just the opposite. That's the purpose. He was giving this whole challenge to the Talmidim, as he made it look like look at that, you got me. But really, of course, that was what he wanted all along. And then Reb Meir says an interesting thing about this. He tells about a time when he was actually in the hospital and discussing this with people. Then when he fell asleep, he says Rava came to him in a dream and thanked him for coming up with this explanation that helps defend him. In any case, so then according to that, then it's not that Rava wanted to keep the money. He wanted to challenge the Talmudim to see if they could come up with a way. And sure enough, Rav Ika did in the end. And the Rashbam, by the way, points out at the end of the story over here that all of these things that Rava said are in fact lahalacha. It is true that a child who was conceived when his father was a goy is not considered related to him. It is true that a matnas shchivmarad doesn't work where the person has nobody capable of yarshining him. It is true that ein matbein nikna b'chalifin, and so on and so forth. All these things that Rava said in the course of the discussion are in fact valid lahalacha. And there's an interesting story in that regard too. Also figuring out what Rava was doing over here is that it's brought that Rabbi Hanan Wasserman one time wondered about this Gemara. He says, I have a big question. The Gemara mentions in Masechta Kiddushin and some other places that if a Talmid Chacham says a halacha before a Maisa comes about that requires that halacha, then we believe him that's the halacha. But if he says, when a case comes up, and he says, oh, but you know, the halacha is such and such, where it's not a known halacha from before, we don't necessarily accept his word for it. Not that we would suspect him of outright lying, Chas v'Shalom, but we're going to say, you know, after all, a person has a certain bias, and maybe he's not quite understanding the halacha correctly, and he's misapplying it to his situation. So here we're talking about the money is already in Rava's hands. Isser is about to die, and Rava is coming up with all these points. How do we know that they're valid points? Maybe in fact Rava is not quite understanding the halacha correctly because he has a certain bias that he wants to be able to keep the money for himself. So Rabbi Chanan had this question for a while until it's brought the Imre Emes, the Gerer Rebbe of that time, gave him an answer. He says, we find in a number of places in Shas that Rava himself, when he said it would be times when we had an example of it earlier in our Masechta a couple of weeks back, where Rava had said a halacha, then one of his Talmidim pointed out to him that something's wrong with that, and he actually uki amura levedarash, he appointed a public amura to make a public announcement and to say, dvorim shamarti lachem, toos tobiyadi, what I said before was a mistake. And instead the halacha is such and such. Now here, after the whole thing, in the end, given what Rav Ika had said, and given that Isser in the end was told that he could do a hidah, and he did, then the fact is, Rava didn't end up keeping the money. Therefore, all of the points that he made so far, wouldn't work by Yerusha, wouldn't work by Matnas Shchivmara, wouldn't work by Chalifin, etc., turned out that none of them worked out anyway. At that point, if in fact these were only arguments that Rava had come up with to justify it and they weren't fully valid lahalacha, he would have said so. He would have publicly announced that these in fact are not the correct halacha. And the fact that he didn't, and the fact that, as the Rashbam says, all of them are in fact the correct and final halacha, shows that to begin with, we can trust that what he said, even though it was b'shas ma'aseh, is completely valid, and there's no bias over here, and there's no nothing like that. And Rabbi Chanan accepted that answer. Rabbi Chanan was pleased with that answer. In any case, again, the point is the outcome of the whole thing is that the Haidah of a Shchiv Merah is valid according to the various explanations of the Rashbam and Tosfos that we discussed, what the implication of it is that it's valid, that we believe in the first place, or that it's considered a Matnas Bori rather than a Matnas Shchiv Merah, or that he has the ability to transfer the ownership of it to somebody else with only words. Okay. Incidentally, by the way, a cute little detail in that story from Meir Mazuz with Rava coming to him in a dream. He mentions there that when he saw Rava, he saw him as short and redheaded. Take that for what it's worth. I guess when Mashiach comes and everybody has to tear some mason and we'll meet Rava for ourselves, we can compare how he looks then with that description. All right. The Gemara continues. Now we've learned before, we learned in the Mishnah, Shir Kauka Kolshu Matnose Kayemis. We said that when the Shrivmana does a matna, does a matana and a matna shrivmana, and he leaves over some kauka for himself, then the matana is valid and irrevocable, meaning, in other words, because again, if he gave away everything, then we would say he doesn't want to leave himself penniless. So therefore we would say that it's an assumption, it's an umdana, as we learned a couple of blocks ago. He meant for it to be revoked if he recovers. But if he left over any amount of karka for himself, then we said that the matana stays a matana, even if he recovers. So now we have to figure out vakama. How much are we talking about that he leaves over for himself? Vakama kolshu, what exactly is the definition of kolshu over here? Does it mean even a tiny amount? Or does it mean sometimes in Gemara, usually kol shehu means even a tiny amount, but sometimes kol shehu means less than you would expect, but still a certain reasonable amount. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, karka kadei panasosai. It means if he kept over for himself karka enough where he would be able to live off it. So in other words, a large enough piece of land that it will produce enough grain or whatever it is that he can continue living off of it off its annual crops. Then that would be considered kol shehu. And if he left himself that amount, then we said his matana is irrevocable. But if he left over for himself less than that, the fact is he's not going to have enough to be able to live on. So then we would say that it's a true matnas shivmara. And if he recovers, then he gets it back. Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba says that it doesn't have to be that he left himself karka, even if he left himself only metaltlin, but it's also kadei panasase, where he'd be able to earn his keep from them. Then also it would be that it's a matona b'miktzas, and that if it's a, that's a matona b'miktzas, and therefore if he recovers, he doesn't get the rest of the nechosin back. In fact, further on, as we go through the sugya, it's going to continue tomorrow. That we're going to say that any amount of metaltlin is considered that he left himself something over, with all the implications of that, and therefore, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be like Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba is saying over here, kadei panasase. Because after all, with metaltlin, even if it's a small amount, he could conceivably earn money from it. But then there are other Rishonim, the Rosh and the Itur and others, who disagree with that and say that it does have to be kadei panasosai, as Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba is saying over here. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Omer Abzera, kama machavnan shmaita de sovi. Look how precise are the words of the elders of Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba and of Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rav and of Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba. Look how carefully they phrased it, and how we can see from them about what the din is with metaltlin. After all, why are we saying that if he keeps for himself some karka, then it means that the matona is irrevocable? Because the idea is he left himself some karka on the theory that if he recovers, fine, he's not completely penniless. He'll have a piece of land that now he'll be able to be somech on and be able to earn and be able to earn a living from that. So that shows, in other words, that the rest of the matona is irrevocable. So metaltli nami. Well, then Reb Zeder says, you see, also when it comes to metaltlin, ikoi somech alayo. After all, the same thing would apply to metaltlin. So therefore, clearly, in other words, Reb Zeder is saying when the Mishnah had said that he kept over for himself karka kol shehu doesn't specifically mean karka, it would apply to metaltlin as well, because the logic would be the same kind of thing. Whatever logic you could apply to karka, you could apply to metaltlin as well. And you would say that, and you would say that he is in fact able to that if he kept himself that amount, even if it's metaltlin, then in fact the rest of the gift is irrevocable. When we say over here kadei parnasase, by the way, there was further discussion among Rishonim. How much are we talking about parnasa only for himself? Are we talking about also parnasa for his children and other members of his household, etc.? Anyway. So the Gemara says, though, but why? Maskif la Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef asks on Rabbi Zera. Or my kavanosa, why are you saying that they're so medayik? That why are we saying it's not really? There is a big difference in that regard between kauk and metaldlin. Manda omer metaldlin. Rabbi Yumi Abba Abba, who says that if he kept only metaldlin for himself, then also the rest of the gift is irrevocable. You have to ask what he means kauka tnan. The fact is the Mishnah uses the word kauka, so that would imply only if he kept for himself kauka, not metaldlin. The Rimigash, in fact, gives a svara karka. You could say because of he not only karka is something that he's going to keep for himself and he can have parnosa from, but unlike metaltman, it can't be stolen. So therefore, you would say if he kept for himself karka, then you would say that then you would say it means he meant for the rest of the gift to be irrevocable. But if he kept for himself metaltlin, where conceivably metaltlin could be stolen, and then he's left with nothing, then maybe that's not considered that. Maybe that's not considered a shiel. So he asked on Rabbi Yumi Abba Abba, then why are you assuming that just even though the Mishnah says karka, it doesn't mean karka, it actually means metaltlin as well? The fact is the Mishnah says karka, and there's good reason to argue that it means only specifically karka. And manda omer kadei parnasosai, and Rabbi Yehuda, who used the expression that with karka, it's not kol shehu, it's only if it's kedei parnasasa, only if it's enough for him to live off of. What do you mean kol shehu tnan? The fact is the Mishnah uses the word kol shehu, which implies any amount, so even a tiny amount. So what are you telling me? What are you telling me, Rav Zeira? Kama mechavnan shmeitsa desavi. Look how precise they are. On the contrary, it's not precise. It seems like each of them is being contradicted by the Mishnah. Therefore, fine. Rabbi Yosef is not necessarily arguing with them lahalacha, but he's saying how can you construe the Mishnah that way? How can you construe the Mishnah that way when it doesn't seem to work out? So Omale Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, what's the problem? At least as far as both of them. V'chol heichot ketani karka, karka davka. You're telling me any time when the Mishnah mentions karka, then it means specifically it has to be land, and it can't mean anything else. It can't be metaltlin. V'hotnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Peah, hakoisev kol nechosav la'avdoi. If a person writes out a document giving all of his nechosim to his eved, an eved knani, that is, Yotze ben Chorin, then that Eved goes free, because what it means is he's giving the Eved himself as part of the Nechasim, after all. Therefore, in effect, he's giving the Eved himself, namely he's freeing him, and giving him all the Nechasim. What about sheer karka kol shehu? But if he left out of the gift of the gift any amount of karka, so he actually said everything chutz for except for such and such karka, then lo yotze ben Chorin, then the Eved does not go free, because the Eved himself, we find in a number of places in Halacha, where an Eved is considered to be like Karka. You have a posik that says about Avodim Knanim, v'yisnachaltam oisim, you should bequeath them as an achuza, as a landed inheritance to your children. And we learn from that a number of areas in Halacha in which Avodim are considered like Karka. So when he says, I'm leaving out of the gift some Karka, that might mean the Eved himself. So therefore, the Eved doesn't go free, and since Masha Kona Eved Kona Rabbi, since whatever an Eved owns, then is his master owns, then it means that he didn't go free, and therefore he's not acquiring anything. Now, the Rashbam points out, though, that would only be if he just says Karka Kol Shehu. And the same thing would be, actually, if he says Chutz Metaltlin Kol Shehu, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, because the Eved himself, after all, is Metaltlin. If he explicitly mentions, except for this in this field, that's different, because the Eved is obviously not that field. So then it would mean that he is freeing the Eved, and he's giving him everything except for that field. Tosfos actually asks on that and points out that the continuation of the Gemara and a braisa that's brought into Sefta seems to say differently. So Tosfos explains that even if he were to say a specific character, it's still we would say lo yotze ha'eved l'cheirus, because the Tanakama would be saying that we can't split up what he's saying, and therefore he's not giving all the nechosim to the eved, and therefore it wouldn't work. Later on, the Gemara is going to continue, and we'll go through the sugya, and we'll see exactly what happens when he says like that, when he's leaving over something that he's not giving the Eved. In any case, so that's the Tanakama, says, in short, that only if he gave all his nechosim it would work, but not if he gave only some of his nechosim. According to the Rashbam, there would be an exception if he mentions a certain field, and according to Tosfos, he wouldn't even have that exception. But the Braisa, the Mishnah continues. Reb Shimon Omer. Reb Shimon says no. La Olam Hu Ben Chorin. The Eved always becomes a Ben Chorin, because even if he left over some karka, he means specifically karka. He does not mean the Eved. Yes, it's true that the Eved is compared in the Torah to karka. Nevertheless, when he says karka, he means actual karka. So therefore, in all cases, whether he gave everything to the Eved or only most of it, still the Eved would go free. Ad shiyomer, unless if the master says, kol nechosin esunah l'ploini avdi, chutz me'echen me'ribo shebehen, unless he says, all my nechosin go to ploini my Eved, except for 1/10,000th of them. Now then, the 1/10,000th could actually mean the Eved himself. Maybe he means that the Eved himself is a, maybe it means that the so he wants to write it as a lashon of covered for his Eved, to say that I'm giving you anything, but the fact is he left out something, and that something might conceivably be the Eved himself. It might actually be that he means to keep ownership of the Eved, and if the Eved doesn't become a ben choren, then he doesn't acquire anything, because masha kona Eved kona rab. Rashi elsewhere, and then in Gittin, this Gemara is also brought in Gittin, says the other way around. He might mean to say that the Eved, he might mean to be saying it almost as like a veiled insult, like you Eved are only considered to me worth 1/10,000th of my nechassim, like you're good for nothing, basically. Whatever the case, the point is that sort of Shimon says that only when he says a loshon like that, except for 1/10,000th, without specifying the word karka, then it means the Eved doesn't go free. But if he had said that he's giving the Eved everything except for some karka, then it would work. And the Omer Reb Dimi Bar Yosef Omer Reb Elazar, and in this connection, Reb Dimi Bar Yosef explains in the name of Reb Elazar, also metaltlan shir, even though the Mishnah had used the word karka, the same thing would apply if he left over some metaltlan, because after all, avodim are both. They're compared to karka, but physically they're metaltlan. So also metaltlan shir etzel eved, when the person says, I'm leaving for myself some amount of metaltlan, then also, according to the Tanakhama, the eved doesn't go free. Because it means that maybe he meant to keep the Eved as an Eved and not to free him. And if the Eved doesn't go free, then he's not acquiring anything. The loy also metaltlan shiur etzel ksuba. On the other hand, though, when it comes to a ksuba, then we wouldn't say that. If we left over metaltlan, we wouldn't say it has the same din. Namely, the Mishnah, you have a couple of Mishnayos in Peah over there that talk about karka kol shahu, and this is one of the dinim that it mentions in that connection. So now, in a previous Mishnah, it mentions over there that you have a case which we talked about in the previous perek, where a person was makna all of it, where a person gave all of his nechosim to his children. He wrote out a document giving all of his nechosim to his children, and he wrote out karka kol shahu, a small amount of karka, to his wife. So we said she forfeited the right to collect her ksuba from anything else. So there, it would specifically be if he left her some karka, and she didn't protest, because then it means, in other words, she's moichel on the shibud, on the rest of the karka, but not if he left her metaltlin, because she doesn't have the right anyway to collect her ksuba from metaltlin. She has a shibud on karka. So we see from that that even though the Mishnah in Peah had mentioned, in connection with the Eved, had mentioned karka, in fact, the same din applies to metaltlin as well. So therefore, so Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, you're objecting over here that Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba had said even metaltlin kadei panasosoi would also be considered that it's not a matnas shivmer abakuloi, but only b'mitzosoi, and therefore that it's irrevocable even if he recovers. And you're saying, how could that be if the Mishnah used the word karka? But you see in that Mishnah in Peah that it uses the word karka, and Rabbi Lozer is explaining that it applies to metaltlin as well. So the answer is, the difference is, the difference is, in the Mishnah in Peah, in fact, it didn't even need to mention the word karka at all. It's true. Whether he leaves over karka or metaltlin, either way, he hasn't completely given all his nechosim to the Eved. So therefore, we say that maybe he meant to keep ownership of the Eved, and therefore the Eved is not acquiring anything. But since the previous Mishnah, which brings this whole chain of Mishnayos discussing karka kol shahu, since it starts by saying Rabbi Akiva Omer karka kol shahu chayevus v'peyo b'bikurim, that even a small amount of karka is chayev and peyah, says Rabbi Akiva, and that you have to bring bikurim from it, v'lichtav aleihem or aleha prusbol, and to write a prusbol on the basis of that the loiva owns a certain amount of karka, and that you could use it as a basis for kinyan agav to acquire metalklin by means of that karka. So since it has to mention to acquire through them nechosim she'en lamachrayus, which is metalklin, bekesef v'shtar v'chazaka, where if you're acquiring the karka with one of those three methods, then it also works to acquire the metalklin. So therefore, mishum hachi katani karka. So therefore, you can say that therefore the Mishnah had mentioned karka because it's just a continuation of that chain of Mishnayos that are talking about karka, but not necessarily there that it has to be karka and not metalklin. But over here in our Mishnah, it's not part of a chain of Mishnayos like that. Rabbi Yosef's objection is still valid. Why would the Mishnah say karka if according to Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba, it also includes metalklin as well, and that if the Shchidmer leaves for himself metalklin, then it means that it's not a matana b'kula, it's only matana b'mitzas, and therefore that he doesn't get it back. He doesn't get to revoke it if he recovers. So Rabbi Yosef's question on Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba is still valid. And we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with the other part of Rabbi Yosef's question. How can Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav say kol shehu means only a certain minimum amount that he could get kedei panasase from it, when kol shehu should mean kol shehu? We'll see an example to the contrary. We'll discuss an example to the contrary tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and then we'll continue with this din about what exactly is considered a shir, what exactly is considered if the shkimra leaves for himself such and such, then it's a matana b'miktas. So we'll continue discussing that point tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
Yeah.